Welcome to Book Squad Goals. To start us off, I have a totally unrelated question. I just want to hear about a nice thing that you have enjoyed this week.
This week? It's Monday. Not a lot's happened.
Well, last
in
week.
In the last 7 days.
In the recent past.
That's fair.
Not everyone at once.
Yeah, I'm
so
I'm
many trying good to
I'll go ahead.
I'm thinking.
This is Mary. I'll say a fun thing that happened to me in the past week is I got to visit my family for a couple of days. This past weekend, and we had a really spirited game of Rummy.
Cute.
And I really love playing cards with my family, so it was nice to be able to do that, and Todd just kind of gelled right in and beat everybody by 100 points.
Sounds about right.
So we teamed together to bully him.
Ooh.
Love that.
Yeah.
Always a fun dynamic. This is Susan, and it was kind of hard to think of something, but as discussed in the previous episode, I am with child, and it so far has, like, truly been just hot garbage. Like, I have felt so sick, but this past week, I had some days where I did not feel like total garbage. I went for some walks. It's just nice to have like a moment of like, oh, maybe I'll live through this. Some days
maybe that's
I was
a sign it's gonna become better as you go on.
Yeah. This is Kelly. On Saturday, it was sort of warm for the first time in months. It was like 60 degrees out, which is unheard of. And then, of course, Sunday, it immediately, there was like a snowstorm. So it just like plummeted right back down. But Saturday, it was warm enough for me to go to the park and read outside for a while, which was nice. I haven't been able to do that in a long time.
Did you read this book?
Yeah, that's the downside of it.
That cancels it.
Yeah.
Might as well have been sitting in the snow.
This is Emily. So I taught a Galentine's Day bar class on Saturday morning. And one of my clients brought me a bottle of champagne, which I'm going to drink tomorrow, because that's when my husband and I are having a Valentine's date. So it was very nice. It was Denise, Mary. Denise is
that's
Mary.
Very nice.
It was Denise. Denise's husband owns a wine
still nice.
Store, and so she brought. I was like, this is real champagne, too. So I'm very excited. So it's not Prosecco. It's champagne.
Fancy. Nice.
From France.
It's still nice, even though
from
she's
champagne.
Got a hook
I mean,
up.
Prosecco would have been nice. Anything would have been nice. Bringing me gifts is nice.
Post Malone wine?
She's the one who turned me on to the Post Malone
wine. I know.
And it is good.
Still,
is good.
Still not over that.
Rosé. That Post Malone was like, I would like a rosé. And it is good.
Yeah. This is exactly the
Post Malose.
The medium level of
called.
Energy that is appropriate to start off our discussion.
I have high energy for Post Malone rosé, actually.
That's fair. Today we are discussing Tochi Onyebuchi's Goliath. He is a Nigerian-American author. You might have heard of him from his novella Riot Baby, which was nominated for Hugo. have heard nothing but good things. I bought it. I haven't read it yet. But we're talking about his
really good.
More recent book, Goliath. And this is his first adult novel. He's written a few young adult novels, but this is his first adult full novel. I'm going to introduce us with the Goodreads blurb, which I think this is what's on the back of the book, too. I think this is, like, the official description. We'll see. In the 2050s, Earth has begun to empty. Those with the means and the privilege have departed the great cities of the United States for the more comfortable confines of space colonies. Those left behind salvage what they can from the collapsing infrastructure. As they eke out an existence, their neighborhoods are being cannibalized. Brick by brick, their houses are sent to the colonies. What was once a home, now a quaint reminder for the colonists of the world that they have wrecked. A primal, biblical epic flung into the future, Goliath weaves together disparate narratives, a space dweller looking at New Haven, Connecticut as a chance to reconnect with his spiraling lover, a group of laborers attempting to renew the promises of Earth's crumbling cities, a journalist attempting to capture the violence of the streets, a marshal trying to solve a kidnapping. Into a richly urgent mosaic about race, class, gentrification, and who is allowed to be the hero of any history. Now is the time. If you have not read Goliath and you would like to, pop out, pop back in. We will be spoiling this book, both the ideas within it and
Before you pop out because you want to go read this book, just know we wouldn't recommend that.
Well,
you might as well just stick with us.
We don't want to condone that.
Certainly three of us don't recommend it. I'm not sure how Mary feels completely.
There are some interesting things I am excited to talk about, I guess.
Would we recommend this book to anyone that we love?
Not really. No. It's not because there I think is it's an not audience
for this book.
Or that no one would like it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think some people are loving this book.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that could be you.
It could be.
It could be. If you enjoy harder sci-fi that is a bit
dense.
Confusing at times.
Yeah.
And heady political ideas that are never fully explored while also being written in very long sentences, much like the one that I am speaking at you right now, that have no real flow to them. You don't know where they started. You have to go back to the beginning of the sentence to figure out what it was trying to say. Then this book might be for you.
Absolutely savage.
I need to light a candle.
That's the title of the episode.
I would say, like, take a moment, pray about it, light a candle.
Say a prayer, make a wish.
I've got my final rose candle.
Nice.
But we will be spoiling this
I'm
book.
I'm missing the bachelor to talk about this book.
Ooh. You've been warned.
I have the Library of Jane Austen candle. Aww. But I haven't lit it.
Light it up!
Let's have one of those. Mine is Louisa May Alcott.
Nice. I have another one. I have a
not the only one that have a candle within reach.
I have a Charlotte Bronte one.
I have so many candles over here.
Y'all are literary, and I have.
I have a lot of them.
Candle.
I just can't reach them from where I'm sitting. All of you just really reached around and grabbed a candle.
Oh, I have a candle at my desk for.
I also have
relaxation purposes.
Yoda one for me candle.
This podcast is actually about our candles. We are not going to talk about Goliath.
We're pivoting.
I have more to say about my candles than I do about this book.
So I want to
understand my candles.
I want to structure this by talking about some of the ideas that Goliath is trying to communicate, the big ideas, big general ideas, mm-hmm. and then talk about like some of the structural / writing related things.
Issues.
Yeah. Because I feel like those are two different things. I really enjoyed a lot of the ideas that were happening, but the writing was sometimes prohibiting me from fully embracing.
Engaging.
Yeah, engaging. So I'm going to try to separate those two things. And I know, like, in the real world, we can't really, because it's all one cohesive work, but I'm going to try. One of the key ideas here is sort of like space racism, space gentrification. Essentially, all of the rich people of Earth have fled the planet to go to the space colonies where things are a little bit safer. There's kind of like a nuclear reactor problem on Earth, and like there's radiation in the air, and people have lung cancer at an alarming rate. So anyone who can has left the Earth, and they live in space colonies that are never fully described or explained. But I guess they're using bricks for something. And we've got all this stuff happening on the space colonies. Like, one character's mother is going to essentially get like permanently connected to the internet so she doesn't suffer dementia, but it might kill her. And we've got people like looking out over the galaxy in a nice romantic setting. And then on Earth, we've got people living in absolute poverty, scrounging what they can, really having a hard time. And there's a lot of conversations about how most of the people who left are white. Most of the people who have stayed behind, not of their own choice, really are people of color. And we immediately have this space racism / classism
spacism
setting. There's a scene where some of the workers, construction workers, are like talking about if they would go to Mars if they were given the chance, and someone said, and I'm paraphrasing, I wouldn't go to Mars because the second we got there, we would spend all this time training and studying to get there. And when the mission was complete and we landed on Mars, they would say, okay, no laws in space, bitch. You're a slave now. And he said, I'm not going to leave my home to be like oppressed in space. Basically, and I just wanted to open the floor to everyone to see our thoughts, our feelings. Like, is this, I don't know, like when I was reading, I was like, yeah, it might be like that. It didn't seem illogical.
This is certainly like an actual possibility, especially when we have so recently, you know, Jeff Bezos traveling to space, and the Elon Musks of the world, you know, forging ahead with figuring out how we can basically colonize Mars or whatever other planet they're going to try to listen. I don't keep up with the space news, but I know there is space news. I'm not paying that much attention, but basically, like, it makes perfect sense that the people who have less will be left behind. I mean, it's not necessarily a new idea. But I do, something that I did find interesting and hadn't seen explored quite as much before was the idea that, like, people will leave, go to space, have their whole thing, and then come back and be like, isn't Earth quaint now? Like, look at how cheap it is for us to live here. We can, like, have a whole spot and, like, we can, you know, make this neighborhood good. So on Earth, they're building these – they have these domes that are basically, you know, make the air clean and make Earth livable. But they, I guess, require a lot of, like, scientific advance and are probably very expensive to run. So they're putting up these – yes, they're putting up these domes in spots of Earth that are still at least partially populated by white people and rich people. And as people move back into these communities, they are putting up new domes, like the in the community that we see that this book is kind of centered around of these construction workers. This is where the two characters, Jonathan and David, move into this neighborhood. And by the end of the novel, we see a dome being created around this space. We see law enforcement being brought in to monitor the space, to monitor and make sure people aren't, you know, walking around without their masks on or like spread. You know, there's like also like quarantines going on, all kinds of different stuff. But like ostensibly the cops are here to like protect the community, but it's just the same thing all over again, obviously.
Yeah.
And the book ends with like a shooting of a young black boy because him and his friends were like basically fucking with the white guys who moved in, just like in kind of a in a shitty way, but like a harmless like way.
A prank sort of way.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And the white guys were like, let's call the police. Guess what happened? So I think that like the idea of this like re-gentrification is pretty interesting to think that like Earth is just like constantly going through these cycles of like just like a long and horrible cycle of racism that never ends. Like,
yeah, I thought it was interesting too. Like, I feel like this is, I mean, obviously, like, because this is a newer book, this is really the first speculative book that I've read that addresses like what's been going on in the past couple of years in terms of like politics and racism. So I thought that was interesting. Like they talk about Ahmaud Arbery and they talk about the pandemic. And so like all of the, like, I'm sure if you're listening to this and you haven't read the book, like, to me, I'm like, this sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get to that in the second.
Yeah. Yeah. The ideas were not what I had an issue with.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think the past couple of years have been, like, not that racism wasn't bad before, not that politics weren't fucked up before, but the past couple of years have been, like, especially taxing for a lot of reasons. And so, like, for me, like, one of the things I did respond to in this book was, like, moments where they kind of, like, addressed and discussed that, like, head on and how, like, the things that have happened, like, in our time, like, right now, have, like, directly affected, like, what happens in on Earth, like, then. Not that in the future. That's what I mean.
And it's not even like it's there's like some hard truths, right? Like there's a section where a character is thinking about like Black Lives Matter protests, and they're like, sure, some white people will advocate for you and march with you, but like the second they feel threatened, they're gonna, you know, call the police or.
Well, and also there, like, there's a journalist character, this, like, white woman who is a journalist who is basically, you know, like, living in the community and being kind of a whatever type of. Yeah, whatever type of reporter you call that, where she's, like, on the ground in the, you know, and you get a couple of her pieces about it. And it's, like, she seems to be trying to show that she really cares and she wants to feel like she's doing something or making a difference. But at the end of the book, after this shooting happens and she has this confrontation with Link, one of the characters, and he is saying, like, you know, this is in part your fault. And she's like, but I didn't do any, like, I'm trying to help. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, you're trying to help, but you're also, like, drawing attention to this community. You're putting yourself in it as a white person, saying, like, look, it's not so bad. Like, I'm a white person. I'm here. Look, you can empathize with these people. And by doing so, you're also, like, drawing other white people towards this place and essentially making it more dangerous.
Yeah.
For the black people in that community.
Who otherwise were just kind of, like, doing their own thing.
Right. Living. They didn't ask for this. Yeah. They didn't want you to come here and write about them. Like, they just want to be left alone and not, like, have you in their shit. And, mm-hmm. like, it's, like, that performative, like, need to show that you are a good white person.
Yeah.
You're, like, one of the good ones.
And this is not... Like, this is not a foreign concept. This is kind of a near future right. book. Like, it's set not so far after now.
Isn't it, you like, know, like, 2050s?
Yeah, it's 20.
Yeah, it's the 2050s.
It's the 2050s, so, you know, it's not that far off.
30 years.
But...
I can do math.
Like, this is not, these are not wild ideas. Like, the whole time I was reading this, I was kind of thinking about, and partially I was thinking about because Todd was in the car with me listening to this on audiobook. This feels like stuff that's happening in American cities on a smaller scale. Like, I know, Tochi Onyebuchi studied Detroit a lot as it was... there's an interview I've got a quote from that I'm going to link to in the notes. But he studied Detroit a lot and how, you know, it was falling into bankruptcy and they were like, Detroit's going to collapse. But then people started throwing a lot of money into it and sort of gentrifying certain areas of it. And it kind of like stabilized a little bit enough to still be a city. And he was, you know, curious about, like, what the repercussions of that are and what the dangers of that are. But this happens in all kinds of cities. Like, it's happened in Nashville, where there was, like, a part of Nashville that was, like, traditionally an area of town where people of color lived. Rent was significantly cheaper because people saw it as a, you know, quote, dangerous part of town. Because racism. But then, you know, some white folks moved in and made, like, art spaces and yoga studios and, like, trendy things. And then suddenly it's the hot place to be and all the people that lived there were basically priced out of their homes. Like, this is stuff that's happening now. So it was definitely interesting to see it in the context of what if space gentrification. And yeah, and the cycle of it is also really interesting, how people become intensely interested in an area, then they go somewhere else, and then eventually as that initial area starts crumbling again, they're like, what if we went in and fixed this up?
Yeah, and also, like, while the people who are in that area and in that community have kind of, because the other thing is, like humanity has, like, laid waste to the earth yeah. and left. And so the people who are still here are doing what they can to, like, to make these communities good again. And we see this group of construction people, they basically, like, capture horses
yeah.
and, like, bring them to start, like, riding them and stuff. And they're trying to forge connections with nature. Like, we also see this mm-hmm. man who is, like, growing
blueberries.
Like, mulberries, I
think.
He's
under a mulberry tree, but I think he's
under a mulberry tree growing blueberries. So, like, we see people, like, trying to, like, reconnect with the earth and, like, I don't know, maybe have, like, a positive experience of the place where they are, even though it's already been destroyed. And, like, as soon as they start to, like, create, like, a little patch of, like, peace and joy, like, someone comes in from the outside to take it away.
Yeah. The horses are a big deal because it's not only just a connection with nature. It's like forming community bonds because everybody is working together to take care of these horses and build a stable. And if one person doesn't know something about the horses, maybe someone else knows, you know, and mm-hmm. it's just like a really unifying thing. But it gets bleak real quick. I feel like the bottom line of this book, when I read it, seemed to be no one can have anything nice. The earth is screwed, so the only solution is to burn everything to the ground.
Right. Which, you know, not wrong. And I was, like, reading Goodreads reviews, and I saw some people calling this hopeful. And I was like, I'm sorry.
Where?
Where? Look, I was assaulted with a lot of feelings while reading this, but hope was not one of them.
That was not a feeling that I felt at any time reading this book. And I know that you're
I feel like it put me in, like, a really bad mood.
It did.
Like, I was, like, not just, like, depressed, but irritated. And I was, like, mad and, like, anxious a lot.
Yeah.
Like, even when I put this down.
Because you knew you had to pick it back up again.
I had to give myself breaks. Each chapter, I mean, it depends on what part of the book it was. But for the most part, the chapters were pretty short. And so I would read a chapter and then give myself like a phone break. And I had to like tell myself, like, you are not allowed to look at your phone until you finish the chapter, because I would find myself like reading two paragraphs and picking up my phone. Yes. Cause I was like, I can't, yeah, I like can't same. Do this.
Yeah.
Yes. It, despite it sounding completely unhopeful and, bleak, the author is very focused in his work about highlighting moments of Black joy. This was just very funny to me when I read this part of an interview, because I was like, joy, you say? Onyebuchi actually took part in a book, a project of many Black men authors who got together. I'm not describing this well at all, but several Black authors got together and wrote a book called Black Boy Joy. Emily, you might know more about this than I do. I don't know. No. It seemed to be a book that is showcasing like happy stories by Black men to show, like, you know, there is still joy and happiness even in extremely difficult times. And I think that's a nice idea. I know there was a category on the Read Harder Challenge that was like, read a book about Black joy, and it was genuinely hard to think of a book, you know. But in an interview with We Need Diverse Books, which typically focuses on like children's lit and young adult lit, Onyebuchi said one of the things with Riot Baby, his novella, was that it was so condensed and intentionally claustrophobic that I didn't really get to explore moments of joy and wonder that can come from the interaction between Black people in the world, particularly the natural world. It's a book that exists at a very particular pitch, and the baseline pitch of that book is almost screeching. And then by the end, it's nails on the chalkboard, right? There's a reason it's less than 200 pages. I couldn't live in that space for much longer than that. And so one of the opportunities that was afforded to me with Goliath was the opportunity to explore scope in many different ways. And part of that was scope of experience. It's not all doom and gloom. Wherever historically you pinpoint Black people, not just in the Americas and not just in the United States, but across the entire globe, doom and gloom has not been the entirety of the experience. Were there moments of joy that stuck out to you, or do you agree that this is sort of highlighting that joy along with the doom and gloom?
I would say that I wouldn't say that the joy is a standout part of this book. I would say that the doom and gloom is a lot more predominant, but I think, I mean, one moment that comes to mind is, like, when one of the characters, Kendrick, is talking about being from Atlanta, and he's telling this story of a party he went to where someone stole someone's stuff, and then him and all his friends were going to try to track down the stuff, and it's, like, this story that – it's, like, all, like, his dialogue, basically.
So long.
Super long. But
– winding.
Very winding. But also – entertaining compared to some of the other parts, especially because I understood what he was saying. Like, I could follow what he was saying, you know, because he was talking like a normal person. So I was like, yes, I know what's happening. Like, I don't need to reread this 100 times to understand.
That's so, exactly the part I was thinking about
too. Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing.
That's like a longer stretch of an example of that. But there's also, like, there are parts where they're playing cards. They're playing this, like, spades game. I have no fucking idea what that game is or how it works.
Spades is...
I have no clue. The only card games I know how to play are, like, Go Fish.
It's like War. A partner card
War,
game.
Spit. I can play Spit. But, yeah, I had no idea what rules they were talking about, but they were, like, talking about how, like, intense people get about cards, and they're making all these right. jokes about how, like, yeah, like, I'd kill my wife if blah, 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 or whatever. Just, like, being silly and, like, joking and trying to explain to this white journalist, like, the importance of this game, like, in their community, and kind of, like, making fun of her, but also, like, letting her in on the joke a little bit. And that was kind of, like, a nice moment of, like, just, like, seeing how, like, they're having fun and they're talking about, like, their, like, lived experience and, like, the, I don't know, the things that they have in common. And even if I had no idea, like, what the rules of the game were, I still, like, felt that, like, sense of happiness and, like, fun and playfulness that they got from that. And I think, like, also just in general, the dialogue from a lot of these characters is very, like, playful, funny, like, you know, they're constantly, like, making jokes even in, like, extremely dire situations. And so I think, like, that part I can see. However, like, the what's going on internally with all of these characters is not at any moment good or positive, like, maybe Link and Sydney's relationship, especially at the beginning, is kind of sweet and joyful. When they talk about when he's talking, I think he's talking to Bishop at the beginning about, like, how you take a girl to your favorite places or whatever, and when you first start, like, dating someone, you know, show them all these,
get to see it in a new way.
These secret spots that are not, like, you know, places that other people go. It might just be a bridge or something, but it's, like, it means something to you, and that's, like, you sharing yourself. So, yeah. But, so those are things that I noticed and enjoyed, but I certainly feel, like, the overall, like, heaviness and sense of dread and ultimate hopelessness is way more...
the predominant feeling.
Yeah. Like...
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, more than, like, showing joy, it's doing what he says in that interview, which is, like, showing scope of experience. But the scope doesn't run from, like, bleak to pure joy. It runs from, like, bleak to tiny moments of
tiny
community.
Fun moment.
And, like, yeah. okay times. But there's still bleak stuff happening outside the entire time. This interview makes it sound like that's a lot more, I don't know, like there's a lot more focus on yeah. different parts of that scope.
Than and I it's think hilarious there actually are. That he says, like, I couldn't live in the space of Riot Baby for very long. And I'm like, I couldn't live in this space. Yeah. Like, what are
Well, that made me, like, not want to read Riot Baby. Yeah, I was like,
this is fun for you? Like,
which I've heard is good, but, like, I mean, based on the description of this book, I was, like, looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Riot Baby now.
I'm not going
to
read it. Sorry.
That quote did not sell it to me.
This might be a good segue to talk about writing, because I was going to say, like, the moments that I think could be considered joyful or, you know, less bleak or funny, like normal, everyday, mundane moments were sections of the book that when it was over, I was like, what was the point of that?
Yes.
Like, after the spade scene where they're describing spades and sort of like hyperbolically talking about how you would just have to just cut someone out of your life if they were a bad spades partner. I understood that that was funny and I understood sort of like the cultural significance of it. But after that scene, I was like, well, why did we just like, what did that do for the overall book? I understood how the horses, which were a joyful, nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
were important to the overall narrative, but I couldn't understand some of these stories people told, especially sort of in the second half of the book. There were these long, winding stories that didn't seem to connect to anything else for a long yeah. time.
There's also an issue of like character development too, because like mm-hmm. I feel like maybe I would care about these stories if I like felt attached to any of the characters
mm-hmm.
but like right from the very beginning you just get introduced to so many characters so quickly that it's like it took me the longest time to even like figure out who anybody was
yeah mm-hmm.
and I just don't feel like this is a book where like character is like prioritized at all.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, why am I listening to a long story about a character that
I don't know anything about?
It's funny that
about.
You said that, because I swear I saw a review that like called this a long character study.
Of who?
Of who?
I don't fucking know.
Whomst are we studying?
I need to, I'll try to find it again. I mean, it was like it might have been a Goodreads review. Which
Like the only things that
isn't saying a lot.
Like, I could only connect the characters via, like, I would remember what had happened to them. Like, what their past trauma
The only thing
was.
I can think is I feel like sometimes people say things are a character study when nothing happens plot-wise.
Yeah.
So it's, like, their way of being, like, this isn't a very plot-heavy book, but it's not, like, a character-heavy book either.
We're not getting a lot of, like, interpersonal dynamics here.
No.
We're just getting like general group conversations that have the same kind of tone to them, and then we get backstories of characters that are all like, what horrible thing happened to this person before?
Which the backstories were interesting.
Depending on the backstory.
Some of them were more than others. But
then I would just identify the characters by being like, okay, this is the one whose mom is getting her brain thing put in. This is the one whose brother like almost died but didn't.
So he's dead. And then at the end I was like, well, he's here?
I know. I was so confused. Then so the one whose brother kind of died. This is the one whose
dad blew up.
Like, yeah, this is the one who lives in the apartment complex with her grandmother who listens to Bad Bunny. This is the one who like. And that was how I had to keep track of them, because they had no distinctive personality traits.
I did love that. Abuela's listening to her old
it
music.
It was funny.
Bad Bunny.
That was funny. But they also didn't really have, like, physical descriptions either. Like, there were brief, kind of, like, vague physical descriptions. Like, I remember the description of Sydney's hair being, like, there were, like, her hair floated around her in tufts.
Which, what is that? And I was like,
what does that mean?
Tufts, what tufts that don't means? Float. Tufts don't float, you know?
They're, I know. Like, it's just, like, confused tufty. Me. And I was like, I couldn't picture anyone.
I couldn't picture anything.
Anything. I mean, I could picture certainly what the landscape looked like because things orange. That did get described were pages and pages of describing
the sky. What
buildings looked like.
Lots when of the they sky had been corroded.
What the sky looked like. I felt like this read almost like someone was writing like a screenplay and they were like describing what everything looked like and then writing dialogue, like long stretches of dialogue. And I was just like, I can't, I don't have, like, I need some actors mm-hmm. to, like, make this work. I'm not going to sit around and read a screenplay. Like,
I mean, I don't think that this book is a character study. I don't think that no. it's plot or narrative driven at all. It's more like a vibe.
Yeah, and it's not a fun, cool.
Like, it's an vibe, atmosphere. It's
a bad vibes only.
It's an atmosphere and a vibe. It's
like a bad trip.
And it.
Yeah. It's just an ideas. It's an ideas
it's, book. It's an ideas book. And I think for some people, that could really work. But I am not those people.
Yeah. Not either.
I love a plot.
Also, mm-hmm. I need to grab the book so that I can get some of my past stitches out.
Oh, boy.
Kelly I'm has ready. Brought receipts.
I know, like, you said, you know, like, we're talked about the ideas kind of separately from the execution, and now we're getting into execution. As much as, like, I was initially interested in some of the ideas, and even, like, throughout, there were parts where I'd be like, huh, that's,
interesting. You know,
something to think about.
Yeah.
I still, like, could not get past the way it was done to me. Like, I feel like this book happened to me.
Yes.
And, like, not to make this, like, about me, but, but excuse me while I do. Like, I work in advertising.
Yeah.
Most of my job is coming up with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that sounds vague because it is. And, like, you spend all this time coming up with really great ideas that are just, like, in reality, not executable.
Mm-hmm. Is that
the word? Because of whatever reason. Because it would cost millions and millions of dollars to make the thing that you have in your head. Or, like, there's no way this would translate into a TV commercial or blah, blah, blah. And, like, if you try to make those things happen, they just suck. And I feel like this just, like, took the big ideas and someone said, okay, you can publish it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I hate the way it was done so much.
It felt inaccessible to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, as I was reading, which part of this is likely because I listened to it on audiobook instead of read it, which is always, like, a little more difficult for me to comprehend. I will say, and I never say this lightly, it was an excellent audiobook. It had several different narrators.
Nobody was British.
They were doing, you know, distinct performances. It was cool. I thought it was a really great audiobook. But it felt the story felt inaccessible because the language was unnecessarily dense in yes. parts. And, like, none of us are stupid.
Speak for yourself.
This made me feel stupid.
This book made me feel really stupid. Yeah. Like, really, and I don't like. So if you like this book and we're stupid, then that's fine. Yeah. Like,
I'm happy for you.
You can't fuss at us and call us stupid because we're calling ourselves stupid. So,
I mean,
sorry.
The thing is, this book is just packed with, like, torturously long sentences that are so, like, they don't go anywhere. And then they break off from what the original point was to have a whole other point. And then they wind back around to what the original point was. But by the time I get to the end of the sentence, I forgot where it started because it's like a fucking like 70 word long sentence.
And like in the meantime, there's words in there like insouciantly.
Yeah.
And lambent.
Plus words that are made up because they're sci-fi words that we never got explanations for. So like it'll be like, yeah, it'll be like with my hollow whatever, my calling a lighter an atomizer, go fuck yourself. but okay, I have just one example of like a sentence that as I was reading, I was like, let me just find a sentence to mark down that describes like the what it feels like to read this book. Okay. In the basement, no longer cramped with boxes full of old toys or whatever other old school stuff families always left here in between their children's school semesters, stuff which, as they would all get older, would remain with greater and greater permanence where they stood or sat or leaned, the duffel bags with broken zippers and the rolling shelves and inadequate laundry bags and small detergent containers and sports gear sticking out of their shadowed corners. That's a sentence.
I think that's a fragment.
What? Like...
like, there's no end to it.
I know. I'm sorry. Like, where, what is, what did I just
read? In the basement, what?
Did any of you ever listen to Car Talk on NPR?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I thought that was a long shot when I asked it.
No, I loved Car Talk.
I love Car Talk.
Now, I didn't know what they were talking about.
So, you know, when they do the puzzler, and like, sometimes if it's too easy, one of them will then obfuscate the puzzle. And they'll be like, I gotta obfuscate.
Uh-huh.
This book was just obfuscating for obfuscation's sake. Like, that's why it feels inaccessible.
This was like a moment that I read and I was like, I have absolutely no idea what's happening right now at all. Okay, so this is like supposed to be the backstory for Rodney. One of the characters. This is like a chapter about him. So suddenly it switches from like talking about him and it's like Rakim had talked at Rodney, not to him. Rodney would listen and Rakim would speak about how dangerous militia forces had made it, sounding all of 18 years old. He was always moving, Rakim, always moving so that his camera always powered on with coordinates far away from its previous check-in. But in the few instances Rodney caught an errant glimpse of his body in the static gray of a monitor, Rakim wore a different set of clothes. Rebel forces one night had come to his house to look for him, and when they couldn't find him, they'd arrested his brother. He had vanished for a time, and Rodney thought he was dead and didn't bother mourning him, then found his timestamp and IP address again on a new montage of chemical attack sufferers later that week. The kid had found bribe money, and bribe money had found the hands of the right border guards. What the fuck just happened? What the fuck just happened?
And it's like one of those things, like, I got bits and pieces.
Like, also, who's Rakim? Who is this? Why are we talking about him?
That feeling of, like, reading something like that and then being like, the fuck happened to me so much that I stopped trying to go back and read the thing again. Like, I was just like, all right, you're not going to know it. Keep going. Blow
and
past
I was
it.
Like, also,
it made
can
no
you
difference
not,
in the end. So
I'm going to need you to use more names and less pronouns because you just said he to refer to, like, three different people in the same sentence, and I don't know who's who. Are they brothers?
Or which one was Rakim? Or who Rakim is?
Are Rakim and Rodney? How do they know? I don't understand what's fucking happening. And to me, that's just, like, bad writing. Like, I'm sorry to say, but I mean, like, I hate to be like, I can't be stupid. That must just be bad. But I feel like if your writing is that unclear, it's not successful.
It's obfuscation. For obfuscation's sake.
Right. Like, how does that serve us? Another example that I had was that in the first couple of chapters, we start out with Jonathan, and it's, like, his perspective or, like, you know, focused on Jonathan. Mm-hmm. Then we go to a new chapter, and, like, briefly there's a mention of someone named David in Jonathan's chapter, but I, like, barely, it was, like, not a blip on my radar. And then we have this new chapter. It's about David, whatever. we're learning about David. David, like, meets some guy at the hospital who he becomes friends with. And then there's, like, another chapter about David. And then later, like, at the end of the second chapter, it's like, yeah, like, his name was Jonathan or whatever. And I'm like, why did you hide from me for two chapters? Like, I kind of figured out that it was Jonathan, but, like, you didn't need to, like...
For a second, I was like, this must be a different Jonathan.
Right. It's like, what was the purpose of, like, who does that serve? What does that do? It's this.
Well,
is
also
not...
just the fact that the timeline was, yes, like, purposefully, like, all mixed. It was, mm-hmm, like somebody took the book and, like,
Rubik's cubed
switched
it
up the chapter because, like, there was no like indication of where we were in time.
Yeah.
Like, it just moved forward as if we were being told a linear story, and you just had to use, like, context clues.
Right.
To, like, eventually figure out where we were in time. But, like, as you can hear from the way this book is written, like, it could take a little while to pick up on context clues.
Right.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it would change that within a chapter, too. It wouldn't, mm-hmm, like, it's not like, okay, new chapter now. We're in a different place and different time. It just was like paragraph break. Now we're here. And I would be like,
yeah,
lost.
Just well,
lost.
Yeah, just like no rhyme or reason. I just felt very frustrated. And like, not only was, because like I can handle a bleak book. I can handle, yeah, a book that is dark and sad and hopeless. Mm-hmm. But I gotta be able to also understand it, because you're giving me no motivation to try to sift through these paragraphs and make sense of them. Like, I have no, like, there was no part of me that was like, I can't wait to find out what happens next, because additionally, nothing was happening. That's the other thing. It was just like the same course of events and conversation and, like, day-to-day stuff, and it's like all of these things can be good separately. Like, I can enjoy a slice of life thing. I can enjoy a bleak and hopeless thing. I can enjoy something, I guess, maybe that's a little denser language-wise, but you have to give me something else. It's like all of the things that make something difficult to read thrown together.
Yeah. It reminds me of, like, I don't know, being in, like, the hardest, like, modernist lit classes that I took, where, and, like, you're like vorticism and that shit, where you're like, okay, so now that we've broken down the ideas, I understand that this is about ideas and I get what it's doing, but I don't want it.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Not enjoying this.
No, and it's impossible. And you can't even just, like, sit back and let it wash over you, because it's so dense just for the purpose of being dense that, and yeah, you have to be in a really special place to even appreciate the thing it's trying to do, because it's so difficult to actually get through.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
And for why, you know?
I mean,
that's my question, is why.
I mean, when after I finished the book and I stepped back and thought about the ideas and thought about what was going on, I'm really interested in a lot of the things this book is talking about. I'm even interested in some of the characters and what they're up to. But everything felt, by the time I would get interested in something, we would be moved on to someone else, and we sometimes would never come back to the thing I was interested in. I get David's not the point of the book, but I was really interested in what was going on with his mom and her, you know, getting cyberized or whatever. I thought that was really interesting, because it's thinking about, like, what horrible machinations will people begin putting in their bodies? We just never picked back up with that.
Yeah.
Ever. And they would, it would, yeah, casually mention, like, this person had mechanical lungs, or this person,
right,
had a
wrist of steel.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, but can we you talk about that? Like, I just listened to a chapter that was like 15 minutes of two older boys saying, "You're gonna love eating ass." Mm-hmm. Can we please talk about the cool cyber arm for like a minute?
Or, like, explain to me any of it. Because it's, like, I get trying to, like, drop you in and have you – like, I understand not wanting it to be, like, a super, like, front-loaded thing where it's, like, here's all the stuff that has changed and here's how the world works. Like, I understand that not everything should be explained to you. And I kept seeing in Goodreads reviews people being, like, yeah – Onyebuchi really doesn't hold your hand. And it's like, I'm not asking to have my hand held. I'm asking for, like, enough information at all.
Access.
To, like, piece together anything.
Like, I got what was going
on.
It's
like, you didn't hold my hand and you also blindfolded me.
I understood why people would mechanize parts of their body. But, like, with David's mom, that felt like it was going to be a plot point.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was a big thing to introduce to then have go by the wayside.
Yeah.
And I mean, that could have been, like, really interesting.
Yeah.
And also, like, a relationship between two characters that would be, like, expanding the like, development of one of the characters, like, providing us a sense of, like, I don't know, humanity mm-hmm. that is beyond just, like, casual conversations and fucking.
It was hard. I also, like, and this is a completely different situation, but I was thinking as I was reading the first half of the book, I was like, what are you trying to say about David and Jonathan? Because, like, to me, it feels like they're gay, so they're both gonna cheat on each other a bunch, and that's not a great look.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what I was supposed to get from it, but it seemed like Jonathan went to Earth so he could do drugs and sleep with people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, this is not great. And it's not great to not explain it.
Right. I just simply didn't know enough about either of them to, like,
or, like, know enough about still their don't. Relationship to understand why he might want to partake in destructive behaviors.
Right. And it's, like, in the description, it describes him as, like, his spiraling lover. And it's, like, why is he spiraling? Like, do we get any, like, explanation of... Because we get David's backstory a bit. Like, but do we really get Jonathan's backstory? Despite being sort of in his head, like, for several chapters? Yeah.
It was very frustrating. I'm angry because I really wanted to like this book and I was genuinely really excited to read it. But it felt right. like it felt like someone had taken ideas that are interesting to me, a world that's interesting to me, and wrapped it in the most confusing package. The most confusing package that also kind of reads like, hey, did you know I went to Yale, actually? Mm-hmm.
It felt, you said earlier in the group chat, yes, we have a group chat, that you felt like it was very, like, a person who has mostly written YA before and feels the need to, like, prove that they know what adults want to read.
But this isn't it, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, I like YA lit a lot, so, but, you know, I read adult books.
I don't particularly enjoy YA, and I enjoy adult fiction. But this was not it for me. But again, we say all this, and there are also a fair number of, like, very high, like, ratings on Goodreads of people who
sure.
really loved this or got something out of it. I personally feel like my biggest takeaway from this is, like, how miserable it made me for the 2 weeks during which I was reading it.
Todd was talking about teaching a David Foster Wallace essay in class, and I was like, ugh, why David Foster Wallace? And I started thinking about it, and some David Foster Wallace stuff, not his nonfiction stuff, but like Infinite Jest or his short stories, that makes me feel like Goliath made me feel. Like, yeah, it made me feel like someone was intentionally trying to show off their vocabulary and like a convoluted sentence structure. And, like, that is not appealing to me. I want writing to be enjoyable and pleasurable to read, especially now that I get to choose what I read and I'm not reading for school anymore. I want it to be a pleasurable like experience. Yes, this felt like school.
For, like, a class I don't even like.
Yeah. Yes. And it felt like I would be sitting in class, like, why, what is this doing? Why did we read it? What is the point? And the professor would be like, well, you just don't understand because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or be like, you're supposed to feel that way. The book is trying to tell you that because you're this type of person that you're supposed to feel like you can't access it because you don't deserve to access it.
But if I don't even know how to feel because it's that inaccessible.
Right. And, like, I still don't feel, like, even with, like, after struggling so much reading it, and I do feel like I, you know, it's easier to do, I guess, when you're reading the book and not audiobook to, like, be constantly – I was constantly going back and rereading stuff, constantly making sure that I, like, understood in the moment at least, like, what I was reading. But then later I'd read something else and I'd be like, that totally doesn't make sense with what I thought happened before. Like, we discussed with the Wyatt thing with your brother. Like, I thought he died and then later he, like, shows up again and I was like, I thought he was dead. Okay.
Why did we save that until the end? Like, they didn't mention Wyatt at any other point, and he apparently had just been living there with them the whole time?
Like, there the whole time? Yeah, I'm confused. But anyway, I feel like I, you know, did my best, like, definitely tried really hard to understand it, and for the most part, like, feel like I did understand it. Or what was happening in each moment to the best of my ability. And I don't feel like I got anything out of it still. So it's like, if I do all of that work and I get to a point where I know what's happening and I still don't feel the, like, I don't, like, reap the rewards of that, like, because there aren't any, that's really frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, I tried for a while, and then I think I did kind of, like, emotionally give up because it was going to take me too long.
Yeah.
Like, I just had to, like, at some point, like, all right, just power through.
Yeah.
Hope you pick up on some context clues throughout so you have something to say later.
I mean, even though we're talking about how it was so difficult to understand, like, even on a basic level, it also, like, I also feel like I have, like, a pretty firm grasp about what was going on. Mm-hmm. And yet, I also am like, I don't know why we did this. Like, I think there was a different way we could talk about space gentrification.
Certainly. I don't think anything communicated here couldn't have been communicated in a different way.
Yeah.
You know?
I just felt very disappointed. We can continue. I don't want to cut off any. I hate that this turned into a complaint fest, but I feel like it was inevitable because we all had a hard time with it.
Yeah, I mean, there was no other direction in which this could go. And I do feel that we covered some things that we found to be interesting and positive for the first 10 minutes of the discussion.
It was longer than that.
This isn't like, I feel.
Susan's like, I was timing it because I didn't say anything.
Well, I didn't have a lot to say. I mean, like, I don't disagree with the things that y'all said.
Yeah.
I, too, thought they were cool ideas. I, too, thought the plot summary sounded interesting.
Yeah. Didn't we? We were so naive then.
Yeah. This isn't like when we read Super Extra Grande, which also, sorry, I picked.
I took more pleasure in hating that.
I didn't.
Like, that was just straight up, like, trash, so it was fine.
I can't even remember. I mean, I remember hating it, and I remember how much we all hated it, but I can't remember anything about it now.
Well, it was also, like, super misogynist and, like...
That's what I hated.
That was why...
Yeah, and so I felt better about trashing it, because I was like, this is fucked up. This is, like, all stuff that I agree with, I just... So it doesn't feel good to be like, I hated this thing that's saying stuff that's important and true, written by, and like, as a white person being like a little shit, being like, I hated this book. Like, it doesn't feel good. I don't feel like happy that I hated it. Like, I would have really liked to enjoy it.
Yeah, same.
Should we rate it?
But
I guess.
I mean,
yeah, we can
that's not it. How it happened.
Unfortunately, we can't all be winners.
Yeah, but no, it is not as fun to hate as, like, the stuff that we've gotten together to hate on purpose.
Yeah.
This was not the goal here.
The work of Sherry Lapina.
I think we all tried.
Yeah.
With this one. We all gave it a good effort. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Ready Player 2, that was fun to hate.
Great example.
I gave Goliath 2 stars. Because I did enjoy some of the ideas and the world building. And I do think that this book is for someone, clearly. But it was not for me.
Yeah. I thought about going 2 stars, but I went 1 star. But I really did think about it, mostly for the ideas.
It's a 1.5 star.
It's a 1.5 for me. You know, it's not a, if I could give it 0, I would.
But because I can't, I give you a 1.
Yeah, no, it's, I even if I had the option of 0, I think I would give it a 1. Because I do, again, not take great pleasure in hating it, but I do hate it. And I have to be honest about that. I have to be honest with myself and honest with the fair people of Goodreads. So,
yeah.
I also gave it 1 star because I was just miserable reading it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I did too for the same reason. I just did not have a fun time.
That's fair.
And I think it is possible to have a fun time even with like a very depressing book.
Yeah. It is.
I feel like it's been a while since we've rated something across the board so low.
Yeah.
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 When's the last time we across the board rated a book this low?
I mean, other than Ready Player 2?
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Because we knew we would hate it.
Yeah.
Some of us didn't know. Some of us thought maybe there was a chance.
It might have been Super Extra. I mean, that Super Extra Grande stands out to me as an episode of,
it's like,
we really hated that and we didn't think we would.
Yeah, I can't remember another one.
You know, in that case, we were due.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten away with not
and
having
a topic. You know, I'm glad I could bring it again.
Thank you, Mary, for your consistency.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking, like, docile. Like, we didn't rate it that low, but I feel like
I gave that, like, 3.
I think I gave it a 2, maybe?
Which, in hindsight, is generous, but...
Yeah, I mean, I hate it more...
Same publisher.
Longer, the further away I get.
But it was a good time while I was reading it, though. Like...
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly... I wasn't bored.
I definitely, knew what was like, happening. I understood it.
Yeah.
For sure. So, I was like, that's... anal. I understand.
Got it.
Understanding.
Because nothing was left to the imagination whatsoever. So,
yeah, I'm scrolling through our episodes. Super Extra Grande.
Yeah.
That was the last time.
Yeah.
Well,
everything else is like someone gave it a bad rating, but not all
next time. I'll try to pick a better one.
I often pick stuff that, like, I give a 4 to and other people give a 2. So, or a 1.
I mean, you know, like, no one's blaming anyone. Like, we pick these books not having read them. We hope for the best. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's a half and half situation.
So we all make the pick sometimes with it's good intentions.
Yeah. No one's trying to pick
except for the hate episodes.
Yeah,
those are special.
Good intentions.
We do have listener feedback.
We do. I can read it. Yeah. It's from Darcy in Wyoming. So
hey, Darcy.
This letter will have spoilers for My Heart is a Chainsaw, which we read on our last book episode. So just prepare yourselves for that. If you did not listen or if you did not read that book, you can skip ahead like a couple minutes or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Darcy says, I really liked My Heart is a Chainsaw. First, I love Jade as a character. I could picture their town in my head since I lived near a town like theirs, poor and maybe run down. Then the building of a new community of wealth just across the way. I loved how her character was obsessed with horror films. Out of all of the horror shows mentioned, Happy Birthday to Me and April Fool's Day are two that I saw at the drive-in. I felt the story started dragging around two-thirds in, but not so much that I was bored. Honestly, I can't understand why Theo was killing everyone. Oh well, it didn't matter because I wanted to see what would happen to Jade. I wish the sheriff hadn't been killed off either. In the end, I enjoyed the ending, and I hope the next book we learn more about her mother. I laughed so hard when she was stuck outside in her underwear.
I, like, when you said that, like, I just was reminded of, like, how funny that was. Especially, like, it was a sandwich she had in her hand, right?
I think so.
That to me was especially funny that she's, like, naked outside, and she's like, and I forgot I still have the sandwich.
Yes.
And which is really good.
So between this book and Midnight Mass, I think I have my fill of horror. Ladies, please watch Midnight Mass so we can talk about it. Yeah.
I know.
That's right.
Maybe I would, but I have to sign back into Netflix now, which is like,
oh my God. Darcy says, I gave this book a 5.
Yay!
Let's just say hearing about witchcraft is quite creepy and so against my belief system, which is so weird because I love the movie Practical Magic and the Good Witch series. It's fiction, though. Oh, the controversy. Someday I'm going to meet all of you. I have been listening and reading with you for 3 years now. Isn't that crazy? Love you, friends. Thank you, Darcy. We love you.
Thanks, Darcy. Darcy, I have some bad news. So we recently found out that the sequel to My Heart is a Chainsaw will not be coming out this year. It has been pushed back to March 2023.
Bummer.
Which I'm sad about because I also was looking forward to reading the sequel, but we'll just have to read it together in 2023.
Yeah. Darcy, yes. I love that you've been listening and reading for 3 years. That's really wonderful.
Yeah,
I love hearing from you always.
I guess I gotta watch Midnight Mass now.
Darcy told you to, and her opinion is more important than mine.
Darcy, for you, we will watch
not for me.
Midnight Mass.
No.
What?
That's all of our listener feedback. Thank you, Darcy.
Thanks. What is on the blog?
Emily and I wrote a blog.
Yeah,
we did. We talked about the woman in the house across the street from the girl in the window. Did I get the title?
I think so.
Yay. I got the title wrong when we first wrote it, and Susan was like, get it right or pay the price. But to be fair to me, it is a long title. But yeah, we talked about that show, which stars our fave, Kristen Bell. Love her. So yeah, we talked about that. It's great.
Yay. Todd and I wrote some impressions of Wheel of Time season 1 for all 5 people who love Wheel of Time with us.
I watched this show because Ben made me.
And then we asked Ben how he felt about it, and he was like, eh.
Wasn't he supposed to be in that blog post?
Yes. But we started watching it, and we were going to write about it.
You can't get Ben to write anything.
He left the country.
Can't.
Just to escape writing about it.
We also have a Y book club up about Those Who Pray. Susan joins Emily and me to talk about this culty YA book.
And I have to say, for me, this was finally a book that was about cults that actually like got into the meat of like the culty shit, which was like very exciting.
For sure. It was very detailed about like what makes a cult a cult.
What makes it like the rituals, the like recruitment, all that stuff. So I thought that was very interesting, and more books should take heed and do
more cults, please.
Take heed.
Yeah. What else?
I have a blog post about the new album from Ravina, which is called Asha's Awakening. This just came out a couple of days ago. I'm a big fan of Ravina. She is a queer icon.
I have never heard of her.
Oh my gosh. Well, go read my blog post and listen to her album.
I have heard of her because I read your blog post.
There you go. She's coming up. She's a newer artist.
Kelly's got her finger on the pulse.
Got my finger on the pulse.
Right.
I actually write in the introduction to this that the first time I heard of her was because my first ever girlfriend, basically, put her on a playlist for me that she made when we first started dating.
I think my favorite part of that blog post was when you said, I unsubscribed to that playlist, but I didn't unsubscribe to
it. I have since, had to delete that playlist. But I will say, there's one kind thing that I can say about her. Great taste in music.
It's really important that, we're able to look back and think about what we've gained from every relationship, no matter how, like, chaotic and awful it was.
Yeah. From this relationship, I gained Ravina.
Yes.
Who previously identified as bi, but then in 2021 tweeted, I actually think I'm pan, LOL. And that was her coming out as pansexual.
Well.
So she's pan. LOL. But, I love her.
I don't feel like it's a huge step to say you're pan if you're
the LOL.
Bi. Like that's
The LOL.
It's the LOL. Yeah.
I think she just when she originally was like coming out with her queerness, she was still like exploring her sexuality, and she was like, "Think I'm bi, not totally sure how I identify."
Yeah.
I guess she has since decided she's more comfortable with identifying as pan.
That's fair.
I appreciate it very much, and her music definitely touches on both of these things, and this new album does too. Very influenced by Bollywood, also by disco, also by early 2000s R&B. Just great stuff.
Love that.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I highly recommend it. And I just wrote a little bit about how good it is and quoted a lot from like some NPR reviews that were smarter than me.
I have written a review of Drive My Car, which is a 3-hour film adaptation of a short story by Haruki Murakami. And I will have to say, like, going into this, I don't know if anybody read, like, a couple of years ago, I did another review of another movie that was super long and based on a Haruki Murakami short story.
Well, I watched that movie.
So, like, I have been burned before, and I was cautiously excited about Drive My Car because the last time it did not work out. But this movie is getting a lot of buzz. It's the first Japanese film to ever be nominated for Best Picture for Academy Awards. So I don't know. I was excited to watch it, and I was not disappointed. I think like even though this is a 3-hour film, like, a lot happens, so I'm excited. I haven't written this review yet, so I'm excited to kind of, like, break that down and figure out my thoughts. But by the time you hear this, I will have written
it. I'm very excited to see that movie eventually when I can.
Yay.
Yay.
Our next other sode.
Oh, yeah. So that's, I'm doing this one. Our next other sode is going to be about the movie No Exit, which could be really bad. I don't know.
I don't know yet.
I haven't seen it. But it's a snowy thriller type, locked room thriller type thing. It's not really, I don't want anybody to get excited about it being a mystery, because I don't feel like it's really a mystery. This is like definitely like an action-y thriller type thing. But with that in mind, I think it could be a lot of fun. And I've read the book, so I will be coming from it from that perspective. If you haven't read the book, I think it'll still be enjoyable. It's based on a novel by Taylor Adams that a lot of people read and got a lot of buzz when it came out. So maybe you've heard of it, maybe not. But anyway, it's going to be on Hulu, so you can watch it at home.
You certainly can.
Yeah, so our next book, The Sode, we're reading The Atmospherians by Alex McElroy. I can't really remember.
Not me thinking that was pronounced McElroy.
I'm basing that on a person I know whose last name is pronounced yeah, McElroy, probably right. But it could be McElroy. We don't know anything about it.
I think it's probably McElroy.
It's probably McElroy. This is like when I thought Clay McLeod was Clay McLeod.
I only knew that because I had a professor named McLeod, and same thing. Anyway, I can't really remember why I chose this book or what it was about, but I'm sure.
I remember you liked the cover.
The cover is cool.
I remember Emily sent the book and said, "Susan, this sounds like something you would like."
And then I, yeah.
And mm-hmm. Susan was like, "Yes, I'm."
But I can't remember why.
So if she hates it, she's going to blame it on me. If she likes it, she's going to take full responsibility for picking this book.
I always like what you tell me I will like.
Well, I haven't read it.
I've heard it's good. You know. So,
yeah. I feel like it might have had something to do with like a commune or something.
Yeah, it looks like a takedown of like toxic masculinity. Oh, okay. Like, should be interesting.
Yeah. So tune in for that.
If you have any comments about this episode or any other episode or listener feedback, which we really love and could use more of, because I know you're out there. I know people are listening. I discover new listeners sometimes and I'm always shocked. And I'm like, I thought no one was listening because nobody ever sends us listener feedback except for Darcy, our one true fan. So please send your feedback to thesquad@booksweddgoals.com. You can also send us feedback via Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. We are at Book Squad Goals and all of those things. Our website is booksquadgoals.com. That's where you can find our blog and all of our blog posts. You can find us on like any podcast app and also subscribe, please. And also please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts specifically, because that is the most important one. It is. That's just the way that it is. I'm sorry. So please do that. And otherwise, thanks for listening.
Sorry that we're dumb.
Yeah.